CNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Where we welcome you to an encore edition of Positively Healthy with Dr. Maria Salas. We're going to hear a replay of Dr. Maria's show from October 4th of last year. Stay tuned on AM 1460, KCNR Community Talk Radio for the North State.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted.
Welcome to the Positively Healthy Show. This is Dr. Maria Salas, Reading Chiropractor at Healthwise Chiropractic. This is a special edition show today. We are without our lovely co-host Josie Salas-Tynan today, but she will be back next week. So please listen to the Positively Healthy Show every Saturday from 10 to 11 Pacific Standard Time. We're streaming all over the world at KCNR1460.com. And if you have any questions, you can always go to Facebook and type in Twins Talk Health and get some great information there. On this show, we like to talk about lifestyle, fitness, nutrition. We support our veterans and active duty as well as first responders, especially our favorite Redding's canine unit. Today we're talking about autism, which that takes more than an hour, and our show is an hour long, but this is a topic that can be researched and studied for years, which it has. Well, we only have so much time here today, so I have invited Dr. Brian Hooker to the show today. Well, all the way from just down the street, actually. I'm grateful for Dr. Brian being in our backyard here in Redding, California, associate professor at Simpson University in the biology program. And welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thank you, Dr. Maria. It is great to be here, and it's great to have you also in my backyard. I am so glad that you sought me out. And I'm so glad to be participating in your show and talking about something near and dear to my heart, which is autism, as well as the autism epidemic.
Okay. So, Dr. Brian, last week on Positively Healthy, I was able to play the interview that you had with Congressman Bill Posey. I searched around and got that from a different venue. And Congressman Bill Posey from Florida, it was a great interview, by the way. It feels good that we have someone like yourself, Mr. Posey, Dr. Tim O'Shea, and the like, and others that are working hard for the safety of our children every day. CDC just out, I think I heard you say it, 1 in 68 children have autism directly. That's not the spectrum numbers, but that doesn't sound good to me at all.
No, and the number is steadily increasing. What we're seeing when we do calculations, and this is me and my colleagues, I work for a not-for-profit organization called Focus Autism, and what we're seeing is about a 30% increase per year in the number of kids that are diagnosed with autism. And this is full-blown autism. This isn't autism spectrum disorder, like you said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was in high school and college, we saw maybe this was in the 80s, maybe 1 in 5,000, 1 in 2,000 children with autism. Now we're at 1 in 68, which is about it's at least a 30-fold increase in the numbers. Actually, more than that, if you look at the 1 in 5,000 number, more than like a 70-fold increase or a 70-fold increase in the number of diagnoses. And we've got an epidemic. We've got something that the country needs to face because the epidemic is only getting worse. We're not seeing any downturn in the autism cases. And I think we're beyond the point where we're saying, oh, we're just getting better at diagnosing kids with autism.
The word epidemic came up for me last week, too. A few days ago, I was in a room with about four moms, and one of the moms had very excitedly blurted out that Shasta County, or our area, is our local area is in the middle of a measles epidemic. It's interesting to me that measles is being called an epidemic right now.
That's right. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, what we call the CDC, has deemed that the measles outbreaks that are occurring basically sporadically nationwide, there's less than 150 cases of measles that have been confirmed. They're calling this an epidemic. Yet they will call autism an important public health concern, but they refuse, even though there's over a million children that have been diagnosed with autism in the United States. If you look at the current numbers, they refuse to call that an epidemic. So somehow, if you get the measles, that is of epidemic proportions, but if you have autism, a lifelong malady of which there's no known cure, then that is not an epidemic. And evidently, in terms of the CDC, not really a problem.
So would you say that the CDC would say that because one is infectious?
I would think that the CDC historically has been focused and fixated on infectious disease. But if we look at the issues that humans face in the 21st century in the United States, we have chronic conditions. We're dealing with chronic conditions mm-hmm. like asthma, allergies, diabetes, mm-hmm. cancer. We're not dealing with these huge disease. And I would argue that it's not because of vaccination, that it's more because of sanitation procedures and citywide sanitation, countrywide sanitation that occurred in the early 20th century, where we started to see a large downturn of these diseases prior to the introduction of vaccines starting in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Okay. Let's give the audience, the listeners, some background of you. Okay, so when did you first get started in your research with the nonprofit or with autism and vaccinations, and what is your background with biology?
Okay. Well, I have a PhD in biochemical engineering. I have worked in the biotechnology industry for over 25 years now since receiving my PhD. I'm sure I'm not that old, but when I did the numbers, that's what it came up with. I have done a lot of work in terms of technology evaluation, scientific evaluation, epidemiology. And I also have a 16-year-old son named Stephen. He's wonderful. And he was diagnosed with autism at 18 months. He was injured by his 15-month vaccines, and we subsequently lost him. He regressed very, very quickly after his 15-month vaccines, and I won't get into the gruesome details, mm-hmm. but he then developed multiple issues that were not just neurological. He did show strong developmental delays. He did lose language, but he also had just horrible problems with his gut as well as head pain. And then later on, he was diagnosed with something called mitochondrial dysfunction. All of these can be traced back to his infant vaccines that he received in 1998 and 1999. And so I became more and more interested in the connection between autism and vaccination. And the more that I researched this, the more that I saw there appeared to be a concerted effort in the U.S. government, specifically the Department of Health and Human Services, to deny any type of causal link between autism and vaccinations. And the mantra was almost, we don't know what causes autism, but we're sure it's not the vaccines. And to me, if you don't know what causes something, it's very, very difficult to rule out any one particular entity. And because they were so fixated and focused on ruling out this particular entity, then I became more and more interested and started to contact scientists within the government in about 2002, found that many doors were closed. I was contacting CDC researchers. When I'd ask the $64,000 question, then I'd have phones hung up on me. I finally received a letter from CDC attorneys saying that they would cut off all communication with me unless I submitted Freedom of Information Act requests, which I started doing, and I've submitted over 100 FOIA requests. That's Freedom of Information Act as FOIA requests to the CDC over the past 10 years.
Wow. Okay. And so where you said you're just starting to publish now, how can people find your published papers?
Well, my first paper came out in December. What I'm doing is I've actually obtained some of the data sets that the Centers for Disease Control has used to say that there's no link between autism and vaccines. I've gone back and I've done statistical reanalysis of these original data sets, and I'm finding something quite differently. My first paper came out. It was the first author is a good friend of mine named David Geyer, and the paper came out in December in a journal called Translational Neurodegeneration. I know that's a mouthful. Let me say it again. If you go to translationalneurodegeneration.com and you just search on my name, just search the last name Hooker, and you'll find my first publication, which is regarding the connection between the hepatitis B vaccine and autism, as well as autism spectrum disorder.
Okay. So, again, this is the Positively Healthy Show. Today we are with Dr. Brian Hooker, and we are talking about autism vaccinations. We're talking about everything. And, in fact, let's go a little bit further more into that interview and your relationship with do you have a relationship with Congressman Bill Posey? Have you guys met
Yes.
On a few occasions? And
yes, I
It felt like in the interview last week that you guys had worked together.
We have worked together. I was very fortunate. The Centers for Disease really started to stonewall on my Freedom of Information Act requests, and I wanted to get more information. It was interesting because information started spilling out showing that the CDC was committing fraud, that they were withholding data, any data that would suggest a link between autism and vaccines. And some of the data came out as early as 2005. I felt like I needed something more powerful than a FOIA request. And in 2012, I went ahead and contacted Bill Posey directly, along with Dan Burton. Dan Burton has a grandson with autism. He's since retired from Congress, and they wrote a letter in April of 2012 to the CDC specifically requesting information that I had not been able to receive via FOIA request. And so since that time, I've worked off and on with Congressman Posey, worked with him. There was a hearing on the autism epidemic in the House of Representatives in November. I helped him to craft questions for government officials. One of the officials was a CDC official named Colleen Boyle. I helped him craft the questions, and then after she answered the questions, then I was able to analyze the answers. And Representative Posey is a huge friend of the autism community, and he's not directly implicating vaccines. He's just saying we will not rest until we've turned over every stone and we've looked under every rock.
That's what I really like about what he's saying. He's asking for the need for openness and transparency within the CDC, right? He wants the issues of vaccine safety to come out, and I mean that's a great place to start. Where does Congressman Posey go from there? I mean, we'll get back to that after we cut to our break here. It's sort of like, you know, what's his next step, and how well are we going to, can we help him?
Okay.
So please come on back. This is the Positively Healthy Show.
Whatever you're cooking smells good, Ma. Where's Dad?
I don't know. I think he's in the garage. Hey, tell him it's time for dinner.
Left step. Left step. Left step.
Nice heels, Dad. What are you doing?
I'm practicing for the walk a mile in her shoes.
What is that?
Every 90 seconds in this country, a woman is sexually assaulted. It's time for men like us to say no more. The walk a mile in her shoes is a call to men to educate and engage our community about a very serious subject to take action in preventing sexualized violence.
What can I do to help?
Every man should join us on Saturday, May 9th at 10 a.m. for the walk a mile in her shoes to benefit One Safe Place. Do like I did, son. Get a bunch of your friends together and visit the One Safe Place website at ospshasta.org and register for the walk. And here, I happen to have another pair of heels.
Left step, You guys make me so proud.
Please join the Walk a Mile chairman, Joe Comenti, and his family for the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event Saturday, May 9th in downtown Reading.
Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Bill.
We're back. We the People Radio goes beyond the mainstream media soundbites this Sunday in our brand new time slot, noon to 2 p.m.
We're back on the radio thanks to our many loyal listeners and new sponsors. Even our website has a new look. Check it out, wethepeopleradio.us.
We heard from all of you here locally in the KCNR listening area and the folks who listen online at wethepeopleradio.us. Span the globe. London, Israel, South Korea, lots of folks around the United States. They've sent us many programs we can't wait to do.
You know, for almost 4 years, we've spoken to famous and not so famous people from around the world who bring a perspective of limited constitutional government, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and common sense.
Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us for extensive archives and upcoming show information.
It's the most fun you can have with topics that will make your blood boil.
We the People, now on Sundays from noon to 2 on AM 1460 KCNR.
You are listening to the Positively Healthy Show, and this is Dr. Maria Salas in studio here with Dr. Brian Hooker, and we are talking about autism vaccinations. And on the way into our commercial there, we were talking about how you've been working with Dr. Bill, pardon me, Congressman Bill Posey, and how he's been a big proponent for working hard for us on the front lines, I would say, as you called him a hero, an American hero in the interview. And
he is, he's doing a super job. His nickname in his district, he's from the Space Coast, the East Coast of Florida, and he has quite a few constituents that are interested in and very, very concerned about vaccine safety.
Mm-hmm.
His nickname is Mr. Accountability.
Yes.
And one of the problems that he sees is there's a huge conflict of interest in the CDC in that they are the entity in the United States that is in charge of vaccine promotion. They want to assure that vaccine uptake is high and that infants are receiving, lots at this point, I think about 45 vaccines before age six. And at the same time, they purchase about $4 billion worth of vaccines from the vaccine industry, and then they distribute them to the states. And then we're taking this entity that is so fixated on vaccine uptake, and we're saying that the same entity should be responsible for vaccine safety and making sure that they're as safe as possible. It makes no
that
sense.
That does not make sense whatsoever. And you're also including flu vaccinations in that, all vaccinations.
All vaccinations.
Which has more money, childhood vaccinations or the flu vaccination?
Right now, the biggest blockbuster, I don't know the answer to that question directly, but the blockbuster right now is Gardasil, which is the HPV vaccine. It has never been shown to prevent cervical cancer, but they're touting it and purporting that it will prevent cervical cancer in females, and now they're giving it to males as well. It has a horrible history. There have been over 14,000 adverse events reported for Gardasil, and it's a huge blockbuster. The three vaccine series costs about $400 per patient, and so it's making a huge amount of money for Merck. Okay, but it is not. It's causing heartbreak. It's causing death. Over 100 deaths due to the Gardasil vaccine. Many vaccine injuries, and it is not. You know, when you look at the science fundamentally, it is not something that has any hope of being protective against cervical cancer.
Thank you for mentioning that. It is one I did not have on the list to talk about.
Okay.
But I was listening to that interview by Dr. Mark Geyer, I believe that's how you pronounce his name.
That's correct.
Who's been a scientist working on vaccinations to make them better. He says that he's chastised, I call them the vaccine pushers, if you will, saying that they call him anti-vaccine person when he says, no, I'm not. I'm just trying to make them safer.
That's right. We want to make sure that if individuals are choosing to be vaccinated, or if they are in a situation that for an occupation or for school or for whatever that they feel that they have to be vaccinated, that they're getting as safe a vaccine as possible. Now, I have looked long and hard. I've looked at the vaccination schedule. I've looked at every vaccine formulation. I just don't feel comfortable with any of the vaccines that I see right now putting them into my body. I just don't see that the risk-benefit analysis would balance towards getting any of the vaccinations, especially the flu shot.
Okay, let's talk about that. So let's say why, you know? Why? I mean, what is in them that causes so... I'm almost playing devil's advocate here because I get patient questions, mom questions all the time. What should I do? What should I not do? They're scared. It's sort of like either way they go, they're screwed.
Right.
They feel like there's almost two sciences going on here. There is the for vaccination science going on, and then there's the anti-vaccination science going on. How can two people be right?
Well,
two groups of people be right.
The science that I see, and I've gone back, the CDC has done studies on vaccine safety, specifically studies on vaccines and autism. They have focused, they have never really studied the entire vaccination schedule and the safety of the entire...
Or long-term,
no,
for that matter.
No, they have not done, looked at long-term effects of vaccination or vaccine uptake by the recommended, which is the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices, recommends a vaccination schedule. Nobody has taken a look at that schedule and looked at the long-term effects of that particular schedule. The CDC has done six studies on thimerosal-containing vaccines. Thimerosal is a mercury-containing preservative, and it is still used in the flu shots. A lot of times your pediatrician will erroneously say, oh, don't worry, it's been taken out of the shots.
Yes,
it has not been taken out of the shots.
It meaning mercury. Oh, no, don't worry, mercury is not in there anymore.
It still is.
Yes.
It's in trace amounts in many of the infant vaccines, and it is in flu shots, which are recommended for pregnant women. It can be upwards to 25 micrograms of mercury, which the if you look at the safe daily limit of mercury, the EPA safe limit, if you were to receive 25 micrograms safely, that would mean that you weighed over 600 pounds.
Well, I mean, every day their doctor is telling them to stop eating fish during pregnancy, but...
We're avoiding fish, avoiding coal-fired power plants, but somehow thimerosal is a magical mercury, and it's not causing the problems. And what I found in my own analysis, and this was background reports that were uncovered from the CDC, is that women that got the mercury-containing flu shot while pregnant were about 8.7 times more likely to have a child regress into autism spectrum disorder as opposed to those women that did not get the mercury-tainted flu shot, okay? And this is data that was buried. The CDC came out with a study in 2010 called the PRICE study. It was in the journal Pediatrics, and they said that there was no effect between, there was no causal relationship between thimerosal-containing vaccines and autism whatsoever. But when I went to the background report, sure as shooting, here was a risk of 8.73, which means that these children were 873% more likely to get an autism diagnosis only because their mom received a thimerosal-containing flu shot during pregnancy.
Wow. And what month do you know that is that usually?
Right now, the CDC says that it's okay to receive a thimerosal-containing flu shot in any trimester of pregnancy. And I've tried to look this up. In the study that they did, I could not find any consistent relationship. They looked at women that got the flu shot early. They looked at women that got the flu shot literally the day before the child was born.
So some people would hear us listen to the show or hear us talking about it in conversation out there, and they would think that, you know, we're maybe wackos. But the science is there. It's in black and white. You're finding it. It's out there. The CDC is giving it to you.
Exactly. And it's not a case of me reanalyzing the data and getting a different result. Yes, that is happening. I have published one paper. I have another paper that's in press that talks about six different CDC studies, and then I have about three more papers that will be coming out this fall, all in peer-reviewed scientific journals. But when you look at the CDC's background data, what you're seeing is they're taking and hiding and burying results, okay? And then they'll use some type of statistical Olympics. You know, you can slice, dice, and Julian statistics any way you want, and they will take and they will, when they see an effect that does not promote widespread vaccination, then what they'll do is they will dilute out that effect, or in some cases they will simply ignore the number and they'll drop it from the analysis.
Vaccination injury is what I sort of wanted to get into right now, and there it's a huge spectrum of what that can be, from death, like you were talking about with Gardasil, as well as, you know, childhood vaccinations. So
right.
Let's go ahead and get into that.
We are really an over-vaccinated society. If you look at the United States, right now, I believe it's, and I want to give a proviso on this number, but I think it's 49 vaccinations, separate vaccinations, are given to infants up to age 6. And because of that, and including things like the hepatitis B vaccine that's recommended on the date of birth, okay, it's given in the hospital. And yet, if you look at infant mortality rates, we are ranked 34th in the world among developed countries in the world. And there are the nations that are coming out at the top. The top nations are Iceland, Denmark, Sweden,
Norway. Yeah.
And these are countries that vaccinate, instead of having 49 needle sticks by age 6, in Denmark and Sweden, I believe, have 11 vaccines. Iceland has 8 vaccines. And so there's, you know, all of the rhetoric that we hear about all these horrible infectious disease coming back in force, why aren't they happening in these other countries?
A person that you work with, Dr. Mark Geyer, I keep mentioning him, he said that we don't have infectious disease here. In fact, the only one that's left is AIDS, and it's basically 20th down on the list right now here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back a little bit further and talk about some biology and talk about why, right? Let's talk about the gut for just a second. We know with some biology background that the gut isn't even fully developed at birth, correct?
That is correct.
And so you're giving these babies on the day of their birth a lot of chemicals that basically starts going into their bloodstream.
That's right. You know, with a needle stick, it goes directly, you know, it's parenterally injected. Mm-hmm. It goes directly into the bloodstream. With anything that's oral, there used to be formulations of the polio vaccine that were oral formulations. They're going into an underdeveloped gut. They're going into an underdeveloped immune system, mm-hmm. and you're getting faulty immunity, and now we're getting vaccine failure. Okay, we talked about the measles outbreak that they're calling an epidemic earlier in the show, and that's primarily happening in the vaccinated populations. There's also a lot of
universities. Are you talking about anti-immunity? People aren't being, they're not working?
These vaccines are not working. In fact, one of the chief scientists who's a proponent of vaccination, Dr. Gregory Poland, he works at the Mayo Clinic, has finally come out and said that the measles vaccine has been a big failure, that it is not providing the immunity that it needs to provide, and he's hoping that the powers that be will come out with a new measles vaccine. And this was huge for me because Dr. Poland is a huge vaccine advocate. He looks at people like me and he will disparage me as this wacko anti-vaccinationist, but yet he is conceding, you know, the other side, the pro-vaccination, pro-massive vaccination side is coming out and saying we have to come to grips with the fact that we're having vaccine failure.
Yeah, let's talk about more injuries. So, like we said, death, and then, so what are some of the other statistics that you're seeing with autism spectrum disorder And
when you look at autism spectrum disorder, I did an analysis with Mark and David Geyer. Mm-hmm. David is Dr. Mark's son.
Oh, I did not know that.
Also. And they worked together. Mm-hmm. And we found that individuals that got the birth Hep B and actually the full Hep B series were 4.5 times more likely to receive an autism diagnosis versus those that did not get the Hep B series. Now, we also see very, very high risks of attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. We're seeing a high propensity, a higher risk of getting motor and phonic tics leading to things like Tourette's syndrome.
Tourette's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
you talked about that in the interview.
That's
so
right.
So let's talk about that.
Well,
as a chiropractor, obviously, that interests me, so... And we see that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, who is probably seeing it more are teachers.
I'm sure they're seeing it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And the CDC has never been able to rule out. In fact, there are three CDC studies that conceded that they saw an effect of tics specifically in boys, motor tics and phonic tics. The first study was a study that came out in 2004. By a researcher by the name of Nick Andrews. This was a CDC study. Then that was followed up by a study by Bill Thompson in 2007. And there was a study by a gentleman named John Barilli in 2012. These are all CDC studies. When you read the abstract and you read the title, they consistently say there's no effect of thimerosal-containing vaccines and any type of neurological disability. But then when you read the fine print in the actual paper, then you'll see that they all concede that there are problems with tics in boys.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with language delays. And but yet we are still here in 2014, and we're still getting vaccines that are laced with mercury, and we're still dealing with a vaccination schedule that's out of control.
Yeah. there are children that have died from vaccinations, and a question that was asked, actually someone asked me to ask you this, how do the parents know that their child died from the vaccination?
Usually,
do they just feel it?
Usually, there is good science around mm-hmm. this. Now, you've got to understand that the principle of immunization, when the body becomes immune to something, mm-hmm. means that the body goes through an immune response. That immune response includes inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get a vaccination and your body undergoes inflammation, it doesn't go through inflammation selectively. Lots of tissues become inflamed. And because the blood-brain barrier is so flimsy in infants, in newborns, then you see a lot of neurological inflammation. Neuroinflammation, swelling in the brain.
So an autopsy and report would show that.
Absolutely.
And I did some research, and there's definitely an autopsy if there was a payout.
Yes. There is, you know, if a child is vaccine injured, if you fear that your child has been vaccine injured, you cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer. You have to go through what's called the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. And in order to go through this program, it looks like, smells like, feels like a legal proceeding. We've been dealing with the proceeding for about 12 years now with my son. It's ongoing back in D.C., But you need to have solid medical evidence. And one of the things that we have focused on is neuroinflammation,
okay?
That the brain has inflamed, and also that my son fevered after his vaccine, and he had a prolonged fever.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just, you know, the traditional low-grade few-hour fever. He had a long-term fever after his vaccinations, and then after that fever got better, that's when he started to regress.
Okay. There are definitely some amazing websites that you can go to. Ashotoftruth.org is one of them, ashotoftruth.org. And when we come back, we're going to go ahead and talk more with Dr. Brian Hooker here. This is the Positively Healthy Show. Come on back.
The Shasta County Grand Jury is now accepting applications. Serving on the grand jury is one of the most important and interesting volunteer opportunities you could hope for. The window of opportunity to apply for the grand jury is now open. If you're interested in helping ensure transparency and accountability in our local governments, agencies, and officials, if you can serve 15 to 20 hours a week for a year, are a good listener, able to ask thoughtful questions, and can work as a team with other interesting people, apply now. Go to ShastaCountyGrandJury.org. That's ShastaCountyGrandJury.org. Do it now.
I feel I helped do important work representing the public in looking at local governments and agencies.
I met our community leaders and learned so much.
For me, it's important to watch how taxpayers' money is spent.
If you don't ask the tough questions, who will? Apply now at ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
Nate Abarea here for my friends at Palomar Builders. Palomar respects this community and is committed to building the best and highest valued homes in Reading. It's all about improving and supporting the area we call home, the North State. That's why local subcontractors are such a huge part of the process and have helped make Palomar Builders' reputation what it is today. On the radio, Palomar Builders helps to make programs like Destination North State and Reading Colt 45's baseball possible here on KCNR. A trusted local builder for nearly 25 years, Palomar Builders.
Call 243-8400. Preferred carpet care.
Oh no, dirty carpets. So I call Preferred Carpet Care. You know they've been voted the best of the North State, and now my carpets look like new. Preferred Carpet Care. Clean, efficient, and professional. I love the way my carpets look. Remember the number.
243-8400. Preferred Carpet Care.
KCNR, 1460 AM. The most local programming in Northern California.
Welcome back. This is the Positively Healthy Show. This is Dr. Maria Salas, and you can listen to the Positively Healthy Show every Saturday from 10 to 11 Pacific Standard Time. You can go to, for questions, on Facebook, Twins Talk Health. Post any questions there. And today we're sitting in studio with Dr. Brian Hooker, who's thank you so much for coming in today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're going to have to come back because we have so much more to talk about. And one of the main things I know you wanted to talk about was the MMR vaccination.
I really want to talk about the MMR vaccine. This has been a vaccine that has come under considerable controversy, starting with Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Dr. Wakefield was the one that first suggested that there was a link between the MMR vaccine and autism due to a case series that he did that appeared in the journal Lancet back in 1998. And Dr. Wakefield...
And no one can take that away from him, that part.
No one can take that away from him. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Wakefield is a dear friend of mine, and I have bounced... He's an excellent physician. He's an excellent scientist, and I bounced many of my ideas off of him. He's endured so much persecution because of that. But one of the things that piqued my interest was that I saw a paper that was done by two independent scientists out of SUNY Stony Brook. And this paper came out in 2010. It's not a paper on the MMR, but it did talk about the propensity for vaccine injury. And there was just one line of the paper that stood out, and it said that they saw a greater effect in dark-skinned individuals, okay, in non-white individuals.
And this is, for the listeners, measles, mumps, and rubella.
This is the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I looked at this one snippet from this Gallagher and Goodman paper that came out in 2010, and I went to the CDC and requested their MMR data. They had collected data from the Metropolitan Atlanta School District. These were children who were born between 1986 and 1993, and they were looking at the effect of the timing of the MMR vaccine and autism. And what the conclusion of their study, which came out in 2004, was that there was no relationship between MMR timing and getting autism, meaning that you could get the MMR early, you could get the MMR on time, and you would not have a greater risk of autism versus those children that got the MMR late. strangely enough, they never looked at children that didn't get the MMR at all. They didn't do that particular portion of the study, which seems a little dubious to begin with.
Yeah.
But I went back and I reanalyzed the data, and lo and behold, I saw an effect. And I saw that children who received the MMR before 36 months were about 50% more likely than children that got the MMR vaccine after 36 months of life, these to eventually regress into autism. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. It's a statistically significant effect. It's a mild effect. But what happens if we look at race? And surprisingly, and there was a large African-American contingent in this cohort because there's a large African-American population in metropolitan Atlanta. And lo and behold, the risk went up to the point where in African-Americans, if the child received their vaccine early, they were about 250% more likely. And then I went one step further, and I looked at African-American males, and it turns out that the risk went up to about 340%. So in other words, for those African-American males that got their MMR on time versus those that got their MMR after 36 months, they were 3.4 times more likely to regress into autism. And I went back and I looked at my information, and it turns out that the CDC knew about this. I have a CDC spreadsheet that dates back to 2002, and I saw the same effect. And literally the same numbers that I was coming up with on my analysis, and this, you know, this puzzled me. I mean, it was very, very troubling. It's one of those results that, you know, you lose about a week's worth of good sleep over.
Yes.
Because you can't believe that.
Yes.
They would hide a result like this, but they did.
And why isn't the Black community, the Atlanta community, anyone in that community screaming about this right now?
They don't know. Because
okay.
I'm in the process of publishing this. One of the things, and I have released this just very selectively on a few radio shows, and thank you for very graciously letting me share this. But I'm in the process of getting this information peer-reviewed. I would like to get a peer-reviewed scientific study out as soon as possible. The manuscript that I wrote up is being reviewed as we speak. And as soon as that's peer-reviewed, then one of the things that I'm going to start doing is to contact civil rights groups. But I want to make sure that we pass scientific muster. It's one thing for me to come out and say, yes, I saw this result, and I believe it's real. It's another thing if a scientific journal will stand up and have their editorial staff say, yeah, we vetted this, and we think it's real, too.
Against the scientific method, or
yes,
okay,
we want to make sure that the scientific method has appropriate rigor, that there aren't some alternative explanations. Oddly, one of the things that I did consider was that there is a greater amount of low birth weight in the African American community. So I went ahead and I factored that out of my analysis, and I still saw virtually the same result. So in other words, the result was insensitive to birth weight, but it was something that we were seeing that dark-skinned individuals, and remember, dark-skinned individuals are much more vitamin D deficient. They tend to be the African-American community in the United States. About 90% of that community is vitamin D deficiency deficient due to skin color. Because they're absorbing less of the radiation that creates vitamin D in the body. And so there's some clues as to why that would happen particularly. But the other thing that I did find was that when you correct also for socioeconomic status, there tends to be more autism in the African-American community in general. Okay, about 50% more. Okay, so why aren't these civil rights groups up in arms?
Exactly, yeah. Well, like you said, they don't know.
We want word to get out.
So this is about education, too, for you, then?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Correct. And, you know, I know that there, if you go out on the Internet and you Google the name Brian Hooker and autism, you'll see probably about four or five blogs. They call me an anti-vaccine wacko. One blog erroneously called me a 9/11 truther. You know, there's so many different things, and there are people that will blog rather than looking at the science and talking about the science.
On emotion. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
A total ad hominem attack. You know, anything that will attack me, my name, whatever. With a name like Cooker, it's pretty easy to attack.
Got it.
Yep.
Oh, my mind didn't even go there. But
good
so,
for
and
you.
That's just like the everyday parent as well. You know, they could hear something or even possibly get it from their own pediatrician or doc. And it's just not sound science. And then they are spewing it in their groups of people. And it just...
It goes on and on and on.
And where's the science in any of that?
And when you're a young parent, young mm-hmm. meaning that you've got a newborn, you know, your first, second, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you want to do the very best that you can possibly do for that child. And when you have your trusted pediatrician standing over you saying, oh, well, here's the CDC's recommended vaccination schedule, then you want to do what's right. But there is just such a huge amount of misinformation and out-and-out fraud coming out of the CDC, out of the Department of Health and Human Services, that we need a campaign of correct education.
We want to talk a little bit more about autism, vaccinations, and everything around that, but we can't. We only have an hour, so we're going to have to ask you back again sometime, hopefully for a live show so we can take calls.
Glad to come back. Absolutely.
I want everyone to go to Facebook if you're so inclined, and if you want more information, you can go to this amazing page. It's Californians Against AB 2109. Again, type in Californians Against AB 2109, and you will get, there is a list in their file section that are California doctors who accept non-vaccine patients, and it's a long list from Southern California to, you know, middle part of California, let's see, Redwood City here, so Bay Area, that's good. And then Marysville. Wow. Marysville Clinic. So we got one here in Northern California. That's cool. We got to keep making sure that list gets longer, too. Doc, do you want to say anything about AB 2109 right now?
I actually testified not on AB 2109, but actually a bill that Representative
the one before that?
Tim Donnelly
had
a bill that he wanted to repeal
mm-hmm.
AB 2109. And help me if I misspoke. Sometimes I'm thinking of different bills and so
mm-hmm.
forth. But I was down there testifying. The thing that was so encouraging and so heartening was the outcry from the community of individuals who are concerned for the real health of the individuals that are going to be affected by this bill.
Mm-hmm. And basically the effect is that no matter what side you pick, this law, this change is basically taking rights away from parents. That's what I didn't like about it. You could decide to go ahead and vaccinate you if you don't want to vaccinate. But I would think that would bother you as a citizen of California, right? And
that was a huge, that's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at the minors that are now making informed consent decisions, a 12-year-old making an informed consent decision, really, if you get a medicine from your physician, not only should you look at any type of informed consent paperwork, which should raise red flags right there, but you should also look at the packet insert. How is a 12-year-old going to understand a packet insert that was written by Merck?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I do want to get to some hope later on
right.
at the end of the segment. But they don't always get that pack. They don't always get that insert, Doc.
No, they don't. You have to ask for it.
Yeah.
You have to ask for that pack and insert. They're informed consent. Actually, by law, by Proposition 65, when you receive a thimerosal containing flu shot in the state of California, they're supposed to tell you there's mercury in it. Do you think that happens?
No.
No. Most providers break the law in that particular regard. They
mm-hmm.
will not tell you that there is a hazardous chemical in that particular formulation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and as the message of hope, Americans are becoming more and more, from what I see, more and more savvy medical consumers. And they're learning to doubt more exactly what their physician is telling them, not because their physician or their medical provider is a bad person, but their physician or their medical provider could be reading the same party line that's coming out of the American Academy of Pediatrics, taking it carte blanche, believing it, and not making the decision for themselves. But when the rubber meets the road, when it's you individually that is taking this particular medication or taking this particular vaccine, or it's your wonderful child, then you need to make an informed choice. And nobody can take away from you that you are your best expert and you are the best expert for your wonderful special child.
So what can we do as parents, grandparents? I always say to educate, like we're doing right now, but there's so much info out there that it's sort of like hard to sift through, you know? Do you have a resource that you recommend? I got to tell you that someone was having a baby that I know one time, and they were asking questions, and I recommended Dr. Tim O'Shea's book, Vaccination is Not Immunization.
That's a great book.
And she read it and said, oh, well, you know, I didn't like it. It was biased. And I was like, wow. Okay.
Wow.
So, well, everything is biased. You know, do you have, that's always a great book. You can get that online at thedoctorwithin.com. But do you have one?
The best resources that I know of,
mm-hmm.
If you Google Dr. Stephanie Cave, she's got, I apologize, the name of the book escapes me.
We can put it on Twins Talk Health later.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Another individual that has not only some material online, but some YouTube videos is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny.
Okay.
And, then another individual that is very, very rational, and he tends to be a little bit more pro-vaccination is Dr. Bob Sears.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
and Dr.
You're right.
Bob Sears, I've talked to him on the phone directly. He knows what I'm doing. I know what he's
mm-hmm.
doing. He was very, very gracious on the phone. And when he recommends vaccinations, he recommends common sense vaccinations, and he also is looking out specifically for the patient, and he's also open to a variety of viewpoints. If you've got a provider and they're not open to your particular viewpoint, it's time to vote with your feet. Okay, there's another medical provider that will very well take your business.
Yeah. Well, what I'm finding, you know, hopefully there are more people out there that are getting the information, making decisions on their own. But sometimes what I see is that, you know, people do spend a lot more time researching the car that they're going to buy or what kind of, you know, big screen TV that they're going to put in there. So, you know, I want to just recommend these books that Dr. Brian Hooker just mentioned. Get the information. The science is there.
Right.
There is hope.
There absolutely, absolutely, there is hope. There is hope for children that are on the autism spectrum that, they're doing much more early intervention these days with children that are on the autism spectrum, and it's now becoming the norm that they're treating.
$5 million Americans would die each year without life-saving blood transfusions. You can help us save lives while being a winner, too.
The Diamond Drop is happening live at Reading Shasta Blood Center. Desi and I will be there from 10 to 5 showcasing a gorgeous diamond necklace, sponsored by Four Winds Jewelry. Challenge yourself and others in our Operation Save a Life campaign.
It's the Diamond Drop, April 17th at Shasta Blood Center. Call 221-0600 and sign up today.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
My old gender.
So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, the community radio of the North State.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Kenya's president and Somalia's Islamic extremist group Al-Shabaab are promising a harsh follow-up to Thursday's deadly attack on a college near the Somali border. President Uhuru Kenyatta said the country will continue to honor and remember those killed in the attack.
Let us all just take a moment to remember those who died and pray for eternal repose of their souls. Let us also pray for those who were injured and for solace to all affected families.
Nearly 150 people were murdered. Kentucky swamped by wave after wave of heavy rains Thursday and Friday that led to flash flooding. This Louisville resident says at first she didn't realize just how bad it was, as she explained to WDRB-TV.
Woke up to somebody telling me that I needed to move my car because it was flooding really bad. Then about an hour later, the rescue people was knocking on doors telling us that we had to evacuate.